It's time for Twig this week in Google. Jeff and Stacy are in here. We're going to talk about Google I.O. It's coming up next week. Google's quarterly results, the good, the bad, the ugly, and F8. What exactly is Mark Zuckerberg up to? It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 506, recorded Wednesday, May 1st, 2019. Knee deep in schnit. This Week in Google is brought to you by LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Just remember your master password, and LastPass remembers the rest. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more. And by Capterra. Find the right tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Visit Capterra's free website at capterra.com/twig. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, the show where we cover the Googleverse and its adjacencies with Ms. Stacy Higginbotham of StacyOnIoT.com and the IoT Podcast. Hello, Stacy.
Hello.
Hello. Ah, sun-filled bay window. Lovely.
Oh, should I? I was like, is that a problem?
No, it's good. It's perfect because the blinds, it looks great. Stacy is in her temporary home. How long are you going to be there?
I will get to Seattle the 27th of May.
Oh, soon. But, so it's just a month.
Soon.
Oh. Yeah.
But I may not have my stuff until later. So it's a little up in the air. I don't know if that twig, what would that twig be? Like the 29th?
Well, this is May 1st, so yeah, it'd be 26th,
29th. So that twig may not, I may still be in a weird place. A different weird place.
A limbo.
But still a weird place.
A northwestern limbo. Anyway, it's great to have you, and I think it's going to be really fun. When do you drive with your daughter, because you're going across country?
We canceled the trip because my dog is crazy. Oh. So it is sad. We're going to fly. And the dog will have one terrible day rather than six really terrible days.
It would be like Travels with Charlie.
Are you going to be in a temporary place in Seattle at first as well?
We are renting a house and we'll move in as soon as our stuff gets there. So we actually took the house already. My family's in Seattle right now, getting the keys,
Exciting. Visiting
the schools.
Oh, how fun. So you shall remain undisturbed during this program.
Maybe.
Jeff Jarvis is also here. He is professor of journalism at the City University of New York's Graduate School, Greg Newmark Graduate School of Journalism. He is also a blogger, Buzz Machine. And this is the official crew. Next week, Jeff will be coming to the Bay Area for Google I.O. on Tuesday.
Yes, I can't wait.
Are you excited?
Which, by the way, this year, yes, except this. So I think I've decided not to rent a car this time. And to go full lift,
I think
even up to you.
It's a very good idea. And when you lift up here, we'll cover your fees.
Whatever. But the thing is, at I.O., they're virtue signaling, and so now they're trying to make it car free. This is California, people. It's impossible.
You can't get to Shoreline Amphitheater by walking. It's not a reason.
If you insist on driving. You're supposed to, like, literally go to San Jose and take a bus.
That's ironic because, sure, if you're at Google, you're right next door to Shoreline Amphitheater. You can walk over. But anybody else, it's incredibly
convenient.
So I'm
going to have to take a Lyft, and it's going to take, God knows, the traffic will be worse because everybody will be in a Lyft.
And there's plenty of parking.
You could carpool.
Tons of parking. Tons. Well, I don't know anybody.
Don't take Lyfts. It would make sense. You save... The environment if you take a bus, that's better than taking individual cars.
Where do I get a bus? It's not like you have the subway.
Yeah, no, there's really no good way. There's a light rail.
Can I take the A to amphitheater or the D?
I take Caltrain when I come up from the city to San Jose or Mountain View, and then I usually take a Uber or a Lyft from Caltrain.
That's actually not a bad way to do it.
Which is nice. I like
switched.
Caltrain.
I have a fairly yicky, not yicky, that's not fair. I have a nothing, because the hotels on the peninsula and the city are just so impossible. First world problem. But I have one near the airport. So I think I'm going to stay there, go down, arrive Monday, go to the hotel, go down Tuesday, Wednesday, go up to you and back Thursday, I fly to LA. So that's my week.
Well, here's the deal.
Wanted to hear.
If you're at BJ's restaurant and brew house, you take the 55 bus to the 32 bus.
Funny, that's where I usually go up there.
Yeah, and then from the 32 bus, you take the 185 bus, and then you can walk the rest of the way. It's about 95 minutes. I think it's a. I think you're going to enjoy that day. It's a little circuitous. But you can do it.
Yeah.
The first bus leaves at 3 minutes from De Anza and Mariani. Actually, BJ's is right next to Apple. So I guess that's why they...
Yeah, I've been there. And yeah. I also, the other one is right across near the airport. I go to the BJ's.
So I'm hoping they're going to give you a nice new phone. The Pixel 3A and 3A XL, we are now sure will be launched there. Google has done some, you know, semi-cryptic invitations and things like that. In fact, they're implying that Night Sight will be a big part of this new phone. It will be about $500 to $600. Although the Pixel 3 has been such a poor seller that it's actually possible to get it close to that price as well.
Yeah. What's the difference in specs? What are you giving up in this phone versus the full XL?
Good question. I don't know. I mean, I could tell you what the... Yeah, they haven't announced it. I could tell you what the kind of the rumors are. They'll be plastic. Bezels will be bigger. There's no notch in any of the
That's
previews.
The best-selling point I've heard. Yeah. No notch.
But that means
gosh,
big bezel.
Oh, gosh, you notch people.
I hate the notch.
Yeah. You know who else hates the notch? Microsoft. They've uninvited notch from the Minecraft 10th anniversary celebration.
Uh-huh.
That's a different notch. That's the creator of Minecraft.
That was a cute segue right
who
there.
By the way.
Is that a dad joke or a geek joke?
No, it's a geek joke, but the notch has turned into kind of a not such a nice person. He's transphobic, he's homophobic, and he is apparently a believer in QAnon.
Shouldn't surprise a lot of us. I have lots of like engineering, deep programming people who are very nerdy, fascinated by weird, minute topics, much like I am.
Yeah.
And then a lot of them are QAnon people. It's weird because,
If you were able to sell Stacey and IoT for $3 billion, you too might end up kind of strange.
You know, I would take $1 billion, really. Half $1 billion, even.
Anyway, that you're right. That was a bit of a digression. Let's see here. Yeah, I don't see a lot of information about the 3A and 3A XL.
You do give up the lack of a headphone jack.
There's a headphone jack in it?
Yep.
Oh,
this is selling me
way
like crazy.
No notch and a headphone jack?
Yeah, that's it, man.
That's your phone.
That's Jeff's phone right there. And it's
Amen.
Android.
So Qualcomm Snapdragon 670 or 710, those are the lower-end, less expensive phones. 4 gigs of RAM, more than adequate. A choice between 32 and 64 gigs. By the way, this is Android Central speculating. 3,000 milliamp hour on the milliamp hour battery on the 3A. Unknown on the 3A XL. Same camera as on the Pixel 3.
What's the battery? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Well, it's tiny on the Pixel 3A, and we don't know what it'll be on the XL.
That's a problem. My battery's great on this one, on the 2.
It may be a Verizon exclusive, but as I remember, you're Verizon, right?
No, I'm AT&T.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see. We'll see. We don't know what the price really will be.
Well, they were not exclusive in terms of they wouldn't do you can only get it at Verizon. They'd still do an unlocked version.
It would probably be the exclusive
sales.
Yeah, well, carrier. Exclusive,
right? I'm sure they'll do an unlocked version.
Maybe not. Sometimes they delay, they defer that.
Sometimes there's like a 2 week. Yeah, they did a 2 week
window.
Yeah, it was not.
I don't know, guys. I don't know because I've always gotten the phone right. I always got every phone, and I've only done unlocked.
Okay.
I don't remember cursing about that. I've cursed about much, as some of your viewers tell me, but I haven't.
I'm
going to
call that. Your I don't agree siren. That's what that was.
Ooh.
I was like, what is happening? Oh, that's Jeff's I don't agree siren.
Can you give us your Stacey excited whoop?
I have to be genuinely excited to
she
give you a real
fake
no.
It.
Oh, no.
She can only do
Carson,
it.
I think we have to isolate these things. And
I'm working
you need
on,
to be the
I'm
Fred Norris
on the soundboard.
Of Twig.
Is there anything else that we think Google I/O will bring us? Any other Any out-of-the-way surprises?
You know, none of the stuff I care about is up for grabs.
No Kevin, IoT Kevin, stuff? Or
no, I mean, nothing that I've really heard about. There may be. I'm trying to. Nope, that's a different thermostat. I was like, that's Ecobee who's making a new thermostat. So, yeah, I mean.
There'll be Android Q, of course, the next generation of Android. That's been in beta for some time. Stadia, which they announced to great fanfare, but little excitement. We should probably see something about Stadia. Maybe not, though. I don't know. They announced it at GDC in March, and then dead silence ever since. Of course, we got the Pixel phone. That's about it. You know, this might be a very kind of uninteresting Google I.O. Will they demonstrate Duplex, which was the very human voice that they showed last year and got a little trouble over?
Maybe Duplex will give the keynote.
Oh, wouldn't that be cool? You know who will not be on the board by then is Eric Schmidt, who is not running for re-election.
It's a long history.
Yeah, he's going to stick around as a technical advisor, but he will not be on the board. Yeah, that is kind of interesting. So long. Maybe they'll do a little farewell to Eric, because he was the CEO, as many remember, of Google for years. He's been on the board for 18 years.
Oh, that's right. There is supposed to be a Google Smart Display. I forgot about that.
Oh.
Thank you.
Oh.
Yes.
A new one?
A new one. I don't remember the features that it's supposed to have. But I actually love my Lenovo Smart Display. And Kevin loves his actual Google-branded tinier display. So
I wish I'd gotten the Google one, because this is a bit big. Don't you think, Stacey? Huh?
No, I've got, I mean, I keep mine in my kitchen / living room area. So it's perfect for a big open space. I wouldn't put it like by my bedside table.
Kitchen / living room. It sounds like you have a hibachi next to the couch.
I have an open floor plan, Jeff.
No, I like that. I like that, actually, open floor plan. Eric Schmidt tweets yesterday, after 18 years of board meetings, I'm following Coach Bill Campbell's legacy. Coach was legendary at Apple, early board member and so forth, and helping the next generation of talent to serve. Thanks to Larry, Sergey, and all my BOD, Board of Director, colleagues. Onward for me as a technical advisor to Coach Alphabet and Google Businesses Tech, plus DIB and SCAI, Schmidt Futures Teaching, and more. So that's kind of retirement, I would guess.
Yeah, but don't forget, he was a coach to Larry and Sergey. So he's got a lot of coaching experience.
Yeah. He was adult supervision.
I like Eric.
And as Robin L. Washington has been appointed to the board of directors.
I'm old enough to remember when Eric Schmidt putting his foot in his mouth was worse than Mark Zuckerberg putting his foot in his mouth.
Oh, it was legendary.
But then, but now it seems so tame.
Diane Green also leaving the board. She was CEO of Google Cloud.
She's still there, yes? Even though Thomas Kurian is there?
She left Google Cloud January 2019.
Oh, so she's still not at... Okay. I thought she had stayed there.
She is now a CFO at Gilead Sciences, a biopharm.
Did they say who's joining the board?
Yeah, Robin L. Washington. A recognized business leader. I recognize you, with extensive experience across finance and operations, and she'll serve on Alphabet's Leadership Development and Compensation Committee.
Okay, so Independent Compensation Committee.
Yep.
That's good. A woman.
Yep.
So silences maybe, well, it mitigates the loss of Diane. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, today's the day that the Google walkout number 2 is ongoing right now. As we speak, this is all about the retaliation we talked about last week. Google employees, more than 200 participated in the New York office earlier today. Hundreds of Google employees expected to be involved throughout the day. Sit-ins at offices at 11 a.m. local time. There you go. So.
And basically this was a sit-in saying don't retaliate against people when they bring up legitimate complaints. Is that what this is? Okay.
Right. And Meredith Walker, who organized the first sit-in, said there were tears and talks of unions. Oh, that should send a shiver down the collective spines of the Google executive offices.
And their investors.
And their investors. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Google says, we prohibit retaliation in the workplace and publicly share a very clear policy to make sure that no complaint raised goes unheard at Google. We give employees multiple channels to report concerns, including anonymously, and investigate all allegations of retaliation. So there you have it.
Yeah, I'm sure they have a written policy, and maybe people just don't abide by that.
It's hard. It's a big company. Managers have, you know, little fiefdoms. Yep. And there's all sorts of ways to retaliate that aren't immediately obvious.
And, I mean, it is, people do get defensive when someone says, hey, the way you're doing things sucks.
Right.
Even if you say it in the nicest possible way. And honestly, when you say things nicely, nobody pays attention. So there's a real fine line, and you're going to probably
cross
it.
That's my rule of life, Stacey.
No, joking. Be nice? What? No?
No. If you say things nicely, people don't pay attention. I'm just making this up.
Oh. I was like, yeah, okay.
Somebody on the show came after me for being liberal, complaining today. So I'm just deciding to play true to form.
Well, Jeff, we cannot say that you're not liberal. I think you own that, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that's a bad thing. I'm like, but.
And snitty, yes. What was Barr call? What did Barr call? I think he called Mueller's letter snitty. I think it was.
Oh,
snitty.
Lord.
Snitty.
A bit snitty.
Snitty.
A bit snitty. So I'm quite a bit snitty. I don't know, people call me snitty.
Snit.
That makes me snitty.
You're in a snit, my friend.
I've never heard the adjective snitty.
Well,
I've only heard being in a
snit. Brian Williams said it was related to snooty or snotty. No,
no.
It's related to snit.
Here we go. Yeah. It's a Germanic noun coming from the apple.
Schnitty.
It's a noun. Okay, Jeff, you'd know this. It comes from an apple slice, the word for apple slice in
schnitt.
German.
Yes, a cut.
The schnitt.
A schnitt.
But it didn't help etymologists much, according to Merriam-Webster. In fact, it just gets them into a snit. Or state of agitation. No matter how they slice and dice the word snitty, they can't get to its core. All we know is that snit was being used as early as 1939, and snitty appeared some 40 years later. And both words are mainly used in the United States.
It was brought back today by our...
Yeah. It's a schnit. You got a little schnit. Disagreeably ill-tempered.
Ein bisschen schnitty.
I can see that.
You schnitty liberal, yo. I wish I could read this story in the Financial Times, but it's behind a paywall. The Cost of Being Woke, Google edition.
Yeah, I did want to read that.
Is that FT? Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I put it up there.
Clearly, it's a Jeff, because Jeff gets everything. You have to synopsize for us. What is the cost of being woke?
Now I
got to
remember.
$1.50.
Oh, I know what it was. Now I remember. So... part of the finances for Google this time apparently came off of YouTube, and part of what's happening at YouTube is they're trying to get rid of a lot of bad content, and that's having a business impact.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's basically the same thing that happened to Facebook when they de-optimized advertising.
Right.
So, yeah. I really feel like we're entering an era, and we have the ability now with, you know, the ability to gather data, analyze it quickly, to optimize intensely for the wrong things. We optimize for profits, which means we're going to, you know, boost engagement. We're going to do whatever for profits, and then we're going to do that really well. And then we're going to have all these unintentional side effects. So it's really time for us to sit there and say, hey, Wall Street wants us to optimize for profits, but that has unintended costs that we can actually see. And it's time we start taking account of those. And we have that ability with technology. We just have to start writing the algorithms for it. And I don't know why this is such a controversial position. We've always talked about like externalities, right? So pollution, that sort of thing. And we're realizing that those are important. I don't know why we don't talk about social externalities and like the costs of having a bunch of contract workers who have no health care and et cetera, et cetera.
There does seem to be this point of view in Silicon Valley that nothing should impede profits and growth, you know, 100% growth every year, that it's just un-American to slow that down.
The venture world and model is very much predicated on growth, not necessarily revenues, until you become public. And then Wall Street's demands
and
for
profits take over.
Yeah. So it's very short-sighted. It's very frustrating. And I want to just smack people. Sorry.
There's another headwind.
See, I'm not the snitty one, folks.
That was not snitty.
She wants to smack people.
I'm knee deep in schnit.
Stacey's going around slapping people, for God's sakes.
She's not slapping people. She's slapping ideas.
She wishes she could slap you.
Other headwind that these companies are going to start facing. Remember, Facebook took a put aside $3 billion for upcoming. They felt EU fine of $3 to $5 billion. Facebook is not
FTC.
Alone. It was FTC. That's right, FTC. Google's putting aside $1.7 billion for the EU.
Pipers. Oh, the EU, yeah.
Yeah, well, but they're not done with the EU. So this was part of Alphabet's quarterly earnings report a couple of days ago.
I guess we could call that an externality right there.
Yeah.
The lack of privacy, now that's the cost
right
there.
The price you pay.
Should it be higher?
I don't think it's the end of it. I think that these companies are going to continue to face these kinds of fines. But maybe they hope it's the end. Tough quarter for Google, actually. Alphabet reported
nearly 15% increase in advertising.
Shocking.
Jeez, how dare they?
Revenues of $36.3 billion, earnings of per share of $9.50. Company stock went down almost immediately by 7%. Here's Google's canned statement. We delivered robust growth led by mobile search, YouTube, and cloud, with Alphabet revenues of 36, blah, blah, blah. I mentioned this. That's up 17% versus last year. Or 19% on a constant currency basis. That's pretty good. This is Ruth Porat, CFO, speaking. We remain focused on and excited by significant growth opportunities across our business. The real problem was Google's facing more competition in advertisement, and its other bets, which are funded through ads, are also draining the gas tank a little bit.
So here's the question. Go ahead, Stacey, you first.
Oh, I was going to say, yes, with Amazon, the advertising, I mean, if you look at it in the context of what's happening up in Seattle with Amazon, Google does look like an also-ran.
God, that's
okay,
sad.
Go, Jeff.
That's really sad.
I keep wondering, and you know, I say this as somebody in the media business, and I have Google stock, as I've mentioned before, so I like their benefit. I wonder whether, even though Google and Facebook took advertising away from media, in media's view, that was ours, you took it away. How long for the world is their kind of advertising?
I talk about this forever. Yeah, because if you talk about things like search via voice, right? And Microsoft actually put out a report last week all about voice search and what that means for how to advertise on that. You look at like IoT and moving less to a screen-based world, their business model changes significantly, and they have to figure out how to change with it. The challenge is with voice advertising. Voice is such an immediate interaction mode. Advertising feels jarring, which is why you're going to see them focus on products that do require screens. So things like recipes, things like maps, again, email, docs, et cetera, those kind of things. Yeah, maybe. I feel like, and I imagine Google's thinking about this and being very careful about this. It's very easy to cross the creepy line in the home. So I think that's one of the latter places we'll see like true advertising, if that makes sense.
Right. So that's one factor. I think you're right, Stacey, and I want to explore that is voice. I think there's other factors as well. I think that, for example, privacy is going to be an issue. The advertising has to become more targeted. The more targeted it becomes, the more it bugs people, the more it's going to cause problems. That's one factor. Another factor is the Amazon experience, that you can start making your own products and don't have to advertise them if you have that kind of platform. So I think there's various factors that affect just simply abundance and an ever-decreasing price and an ever-increasing desperation and irritation. So those are other factors as well. Let's go back to the voice. If you were to, you know, if you were to say that now voice interactions versus textual interactions are, forget video because that's passive. So let's just say things you're interacting with, which is your point with voice. If today that represented 0.01% of interactions, where does it go in 2-3 years? How much is this going to grow, this voice thing, in your view?
Let me pull up the Bing voice report because literally this is part of what they talk about.
I'd be very impressed if you pulled it up with your voice.
That would
but
be awesome.
But you wouldn't be using Bing if you did.
I am not using Cortana. Actually, who was using? Someone used to use Bing. Anyway.
It's telling.
Amazon used to use Bing, actually.
So did Yahoo.
Searches.
So it's very telling that Microsoft announced on its quarterly results a week ago, they're renaming Bing to Microsoft Ads.
Huh.
Not the search Bing, but the Bing Ads.
Oh. So in terms of how people are interacting with voice, they're using it mostly with a digital assistant. And this is a survey. So it talks about 72%. If you scroll down to page 9 of this report, you're going to see the thing I'm looking at right now.
Wow. They're showing a Facebook portal.
Yeah, that's weird.
Okay. We just took ours apart because we couldn't think of what else to do with it.
That's probably the most benign.
This is such a new Microsoft. The very first image is Facebook portal. Then Satya Nadella. All right, here's page 6. Oh, you want to go to 9. Okay, here.
Oh, there you go.
How are people engaging with voice? Go ahead.
Well, this is the percent of the 0.01%.
Well, I think it's 68% of people have used a digital assistant. So,
that's the vast majority of people using voice are doing it with voice search with a personal assistant, 72%. 35% through a speaker, 36% to a TV or smart home device that's not a speaker.
Oh, I'm surprised at that.
Yeah. Almost a third to a vehicle.
And that then, I would think there'd be more of.
Yeah. And 52% of their interactions are voice skills or actions through a smart home speaker like, for instance, Hey Cortana, play Morning Edition. Which I can, by the way, say out loud because I don't think anybody in our audience is going to be affected by that. The most popular digital assistant may be different than you think.
Here's Microsoft's plug right here.
Well, they're not going to say, although the Amazon is widely known and advertised in the U.S., it is perhaps surprisingly the most popular one. Siri and Google Assistant are tied for 36%.
Because they're on the phones.
Yeah. And Echo 25% because you have to buy an Echo thing.
Yes. Yeah. And look, Cortana is on there with 19%. Who's the one in five people who are using?
That's bizarre.
Maybe they're talking to their Windows PC.
Yeah, it's on Windows.
Oh, we always forget that. It's like people, it's like my forgetting the fathers were still on AOL.
I don't forget it. In fact, I actively remove it for Windows installations.
I do too, but you know, I actually was playing with someone's computer, and they had it, and it was actually really cool because I said, I was like, "Hey," or I asked Cortana to open a spreadsheet, and she did.
Yeah.
So it was a little weird because that's not what I'm used to doing, and I wouldn't have it. But once you get into the habit, I could see it becoming really compelling.
Yeah, I mean, I do that already. You hit Windows key, type the name of the spreadsheet, return, it'll open it. So to me, since my hands are on the keyboard, and it's a more direct way of doing it, but I could see the value of that, you know.
Yeah.
Or imagine my question, if you're.
Sorry. Yes, Beck.
How much does this become a part of everybody's everyday life in your predictions?
I think it's going to become part of almost everyone's everyday life. I think because it's on phones and because it's so easy to use, even people who don't have a smart speaker, they're going to search for information via voice. And I think that's already proven out. They talk about like how people are using this today. Most people use it for searching for a quick fact. They say it's like 68% here. That jives with how people are using the Amazon Echo, although the Amazon Echo, the most popular use case, is still setting a kitchen timer.
Yeah.
But like some of the things like asking for directions, I do that all the time on my phone. And I do too.
I say navigate to the Twit Studios or whatever. And
yeah,
that's so very useful. Think about.
And I was actually surprised. 47% of people use it for searching for a business. So if you think about, again, such a direct interaction, you know, hey, G, where is the nearest Jiffy Lube to me? You know, there's a lot happening in the back end, and the voice comes out with, it's 14 miles away. Do you want me to navigate to you or navigate to there? And you say yes, and then poof, all of that has happened without a chance for an ad, right?
I would guess that the creators of these technologies are happy, very happy with the trajectory. It's not taking the world over yet, but it's enough. It's enough critical mass so that when the technology gets better, they're going to have enough people who will be using it to then tell everybody else, oh, wow, you got to try Cortana or Echo or whatever. It's amazing. Smart home speaker ownership grows significantly.
Yeah. Look at that. In 2018, ComScore says that 50% of all searches will be voice searches by 2020.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you believe that?
Yeah.
I do, actually, because I search for data probably equally via voice and via I actually think that might be low.
And do you prefer the results on screen or on voice?
Well, I pick voice for things that I know voice is good at. So mm-hmm. I search for quick facts and things like that on voice. Like,
this is such a Microsofty report. 75% of households will have at least one smart speaker by 2020. Next to it is the Harman Kardon Echo or Invoke, which I have, but very few do. In fact, it looks like only about 5% of the population intend to buy one, and compared to 43% for the Echo. Big drop for Google Home, which is kind of surprising, from 58% to 17%. This is planned to purchase.
I can see that. I think people went out with Google because they were waiting for it. There was pent-up demand, and I think once people had it, they were like, that's good.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really have the mind share that others...
Echo really is winning in this.
I want to see the percentage of people who read this report and thought that was a picture of an Echo.
I did.
Yeah.
I thought it was the Echo Plus. Carson, I didn't even realize
the
that.
The percentage of designers...
Well, maybe it is. Am I wrong? Maybe it is an Echo.
That looks like an Echo Plus to
me. I think you're right. I'm sorry. It looks... Oh, okay. The Harman Kardon is more tilted.
It's triangle?
It's a little more triangular. Like a little... Slightly more triangular.
It looks like it's tilted on top, but...
Yeah, that's a weird... There's a weird angle on this thing that made me... Yeah, you're right. Never mind. It's an Echo. 45% of our survey respondents...
Okay, change my question, too. How many people know, reading this report, even know what a Kardon looks like?
A Harman Kardon. Yeah, apparently not me. The Invoke. Are they still making it? I don't even know if you can buy it anymore. I'm going to keep mine. It's a relic of the past. How many people own multiple smart speakers? What would you think? 59% only own one. 30% own two.
I'm in the
1% too.
Yeah, I think I'm actually the 1%. I hardly use them.
We're 1%ers.
Woot,
woot. Because they're cheap. They're $30.
Although right now in my 1,000 square foot apartment, I only have 3 assistants.
Yeah, because you're not so far. You're never too far from any one of them. 80% of users reported being somewhat or very satisfied. See, as that number goes up, it can't go up much, but I think it's the somewhat satisfieds turn to very satisfieds. That's when you're good enough that you're going to have critical mass so that can really happen.
And we're definitely past the early. We're in the early majority or past it.
Yes, that's right. Here's the technology. This is actually a graph you could use for other stuff too. Technology adoption life cycle market. You got your innovators, us techies.
That's us.
We try it. Early adopters, visionaries, get ahead. That's 13%. Then the chasm. But we've bridged the chasm because we're right here in the early majority, 34%. Late majority, 34%. Laggards, 16%. So you've got techies, visionaries, pragmatists, conservatives, and skeptics. Isn't that an interesting? This is good. Crossing the chasm. I think we can say safely that voice assistants have crossed the chasm. Now they just have to get better. That's a good report. Thank you for bringing that up, Stacey.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
I am full of reported information.
Yeah. Going back to Alphabet's earnings, one of the reasons they're doing these new Pixel 3 and 3A so early is because the Pixel 3 seemed to be kind of a flop. Sundar Pichai cited year-over-year headwinds. And the market, by the way, responded. Google's stock, I should show you the graph. Oh, my gosh. It's kind of a...
I mentioned earlier I have a little of the stock.
Well, get ready. Hold on to your hats. You see that big drop right here?
Oh.
That's when the quarterly results came out. They dropped from a peak of $1,287.58 to $1,183. That's not a huge drop.
No, it's,
you'll be all right. You know,
I mean, in the long run, that's why I was bringing this up, though. I think that Google and Amazon are really smart companies. I'll start there, and I think they're going to have a long future. But you know, there was Microsoft. There were others. I still think, but that's why I'm wondering if the ad based business for Google is more challenged than we know today, and they're so dependent, and same for Facebook. I was thinking about Facebook today too, and I don't want to get into the whole, well, actually I do, because
let's talk about FA. Actually, let's take a break, and I would like to, because the FA, the Facebook Developers Conference was yesterday. We agonized over whether to stream it and decided not to, because we're streaming Google and Microsoft events next week. But I couldn't bring myself to do it, but there were some interesting things. Yeah, and you watched it, so you're going to be our report in just a second, okay? We'll continue with This Week in Google, but first a word from LastPass. This is really more like a public service announcement. If you're not using the LastPass password manager, do. Start right now. Every security expert agrees. So, first of all, we should say, just to make you feel better, this passwords thing is way out of hand. Passwords suck. Having to remember thousands of passwords is just not possible. And, of course, it leads people to do dangerous things like reuse the same password over and over again. Use memorable passwords. Usually memorable means easy to guess or easy to break. So if you're using your kids' birth dates and your dog's name, you need good, long, strong passwords no one could remember. And then you use LastPass to keep track of them. LastPass will generate them. And then you unlock that password vault with one long, secure master password. And then whenever you're using Windows or Mac or iOS or Android or Linux, it'll just fill it in for you. I've installed lately a bunch of new systems. And, of course, the very first thing I install is LastPass. That way I can log into everything else, get everything else set up. LastPass is amazing. Really important if you're a business. Because maybe you've got your password hygiene under control, and I'm sure you do if you listen to our shows, but your employees probably don't. We know more than half of all employees share passwords, sometimes even with people outside the company. They put post-it notes on their monitors so they can remember them. They think up bad passwords. LastPass fixes all that. We started using LastPass Enterprise at TWIT some years ago. I've been using LastPass for almost a decade since they started. It lets us manage password security. We have complete administrative oversight. We could do things, for instance, there's like 100 policies that you can configure, including requirements for the master password and requiring two-factor, which we do. You could even use LastPass has its own authenticator app, but you can use a YubiKey or Duo Security, Google Authenticator. You get to choose, and I think that's really a great way to make your stuff more secure. If you're in the cloud, you've got lots of passwords that hold the keys to your business. You need to protect them with LastPass Enterprise. There's LastPass Teams for smaller companies, teams of 50 or fewer, LastPass Premium for individuals. And at home, we use LastPass Families, which has some nice sharing features, as does LastPass Enterprise. that let you share passwords with your spouse or your other family members very easily by just putting them into a family folder. I also use the one feature of LastPass Family is I really like emergency access. So if I should become disabled or pass away, my wife would get access to my passwords after some precautionary things. And I think that's really important. Really, really important. You got to try LastPass. 13.5 million people use LastPass. Tens of thousands of businesses. Visit LastPass.com/twit. This is probably the single most important thing you'll hear today. If you're not using LastPass, get to LastPass.com/twit and protect yourself, protect your company. LastPass.com/twit. We thank them for their support, for providing a great product. And we thank you for using that URL, showing your support for This Week in Google. F8 was yesterday. I saw a little bit of Mark Zuckerberg. He doubled down, Jeff Jarvis, he doubled down on his privacy plans.
Which actually bothered me. So there's an image of him under the sign, "The future is private."
Yep.
That disturbed me because what I've been fearing is an internet that we all go into our turtle shells. And I understand why Facebook's doing it. I understand why he's saying it. I get all of that. And a full disclosure is that I raised money for my school from Facebook. I am independent of Facebook, received no money personally from any platform. End of disclosure. But here I'm complaining about it. What the internet does that I so treasure is that all these voices can be heard and anyone can be public and that we share and that sharing is a public act at some level or another. And that's why I've celebrated Facebook and Twitter's existences. And I don't know what Facebook is going to do with the core of Facebook besides take away the blue, which we'll get to in a minute. But I do worry about the world we heard about here, which was that everything is locked down in private. Everything is temporary. That we lose the links and the permanence that build a culture in new ways. And yes, with things that go wrong, and yes, with things we've learned. And I'm not saying that I want everything to be public. I'm not saying that at all. But if everything is private, I think we lose something. So that bothered me.
I think if you go beyond Facebook, though, these same avenues exist. You could create a WordPress blog mm-hmm. to make things public. And it's Facebook, if you think of it, a better analogy may be like the conversations you have with people on the street that you meet. So imagine the public square and you're talking to them. Having those be more ephemeral and private makes sense. And you can even develop your opinions there and test them out against people without them penalizing you. And then you can go in and write a blog post and post it on Medium. Like, I still feel like there are plenty of avenues that are still accessible to lots of people that give you, because Facebook was trying to be both things. And I don't, and what it mm-hmm. discovered is it couldn't be both things because no one tries out their public opinions unless they're a teenager in front of everyone, right? That's not a sophisticated way to develop things. Or you. And I think this is actually a really good move because it makes it safe for people to explore, and it also helps protect young people from being penalized for things they said or did, and even older people that they said and did when they were, you know, younger and stupid. I mean, that's a good thing, and there's still those avenues.
Yeah, too. I don't disagree with that, Stacey. I just think that we haven't yet fully explored. So, I mean, and yes, I think you need those spaces. And maybe Facebook was the wrong one. But let's just say that Twitter did what Jack has been talking about and goes to subjects, not people. Then, you know, my now hackneyed, because I've said it so often, example. But how do we get then the coalescing that occurs, the gathering that occurs around Me Too or Black Lives Matter or Living While Black? How do we get Ferguson, Missouri? How do we get those moments when voices who were not heard can now find an audience they don't know, which is the point of being public.
Right. And I think there's two things happening. I think there is a cultural shift and journalists are looking at places that are not just quote unquote the mainstream media. And I think we've brought in more voices to journalism in general, which is good. And I do think that there are plenty of, like, a Medium post can help draw attention to things. I think Twitter still, I mean, let's hope that that doesn't go away. If it does, I think those things will still develop, because I don't think we can turn our backs on most of the population, right? I don't think we'll be able to. I hope not, anyway. Maybe I'm too naive.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like
either or. Isn't an either or. There's going to be plenty of a conversation in the public square. I just think it's nice to have the option to really be private if you want to. You're saying everybody should be private by default or public by default?
But that's what he's saying. No. I'm not saying that. Please don't put me in that position again. No. But Mark was saying that it becomes private by default.
Which is the right default.
Well, but not just default. He's saying the future is private.
Here's The Verge did a 12-minute cutdown. I won't play the whole thing, but here's a little cutdown, at least of the beginning of Mark's comments at F8. Let me turn on the sound.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to F8. Today, we are going to talk about building a privacy-focused social platform. Privacy gives us the freedom to be ourselves. So it's no surprise that the fastest ways that we're all communicating online are private messaging, in small groups, and in stories. This is the next chapter for our services. I get that a lot of people aren't sure that we're serious about this.
This is awkward.
Do you think the laughter was written into this script? It did not seem organic.
poor
Mark.
I don't actually feel bad for him. I'm just like, he's an awkward individual. Power to him
He's acknowledging that nobody really believed him when he said, we're going to go private. Yeah. And good on him for acknowledging it.
Yes, exactly. You know, it was necessary.
That we don't exactly have the strongest reputation on privacy right now, to put it lightly. But I'm committed to doing this well. And this vision is based on six principles. First, we're committed to working openly. Now, second, we're taking a more proactive role.
This is a super cut, by the way. That's why it's a little disjointed.
But we're taking a more proactive role in making sure that all of our partners.
Hold on for one second, Leo.
What was that cheering all about?
So that was developers seeing themselves on the screen, right?
Oh.
But that was also funny because Mark was about to say, well, we're cutting back your power as developers. So he says, well, the response doesn't match the words that I'm about to say.
Oh, boy.
Sure.
It was funny.
Their PR and marketing people are great.
Well, we're taking a more proactive role in making sure that all of our partners and developers use our services for good. We're also building out.
What were you saying, Stacey?
Oh, I was going to say their marketing and PR team are excellent. in terms of that juxtaposition.
Yeah.
A lot of deep technical infrastructure and replumbing the whole infrastructure that we build for this company to support this privacy vision. It's not going to happen overnight. So let's start with our messaging apps.
Okay. So we don't have to continue through this.
No, we don't know. By the way, just a little side note here. This back screen color, it does that thing where the screen color changes.
Yeah.
There's about 20 seconds where he's in front of a green screen.
Oh, so if you want to have fun, get ready, memesters.
Yeah, exactly.
Get ready. So one thing that got a lot of attention is the new look Facebook, which has, as Mark said,
did you get it yet?
Hardly any blue. I don't have Facebook.
Oh, that's...
I have to say, this morning I thought, well, I should log in and see it. And it said, who's Leo? Who are you? We don't have an account for you. So I literally, it's gone now. But this is what it'll look like. I think that's a much better look, I guess.
It is. You know what? What cracks me up is... So this is a big thing. Back in 2000, and I think it was 2009, when Facebook launched their open compute servers, the first hardware that they built, and the whole goal of it was to reduce the cost of running their servers, right?
Right.
They actually made a decision to use blue LEDs, even though they were 7 cents more expensive, because it was Facebook blue.
Right.
So I'm like, 10 years later, they're like, okay, we're going to get rid of that.
That's Facebook.
Yeah, Zuckerberg laughed on stage about how we're even getting rid of the blue. I think this is the fine, good hand of Fujisimo.
Notice the very front and center groups. Stories, by the way, which is straight out of Instagram. In fact, this middle thing looks a lot like an Instagram feed.
Mm-hmm.
But groups, and what other big social network pivoted to groups all of a sudden. Communities. How did that work for Google Plus when they did that? So groups are...
groups are already big here.
Yeah, Facebook groups. And groups can be private by default. He said something that surprised me. He wanted you to be able to share your health information with a health provider privately through Facebook. That's going to take some relearning for people to say, yeah, I'm going to privately tell my health provider on Facebook about my health issues.
That's where the wording changes, right?
Yeah.
So what he's doing is saying you're not doing it on Facebook, you're doing it via Facebook.
Yeah, well.
Which is going to be hard to, I agree with you, it's going to be hard to train people. Mm. But that's in essence what they're saying.
That's what Apple is doing with their watch and other data efforts to share with your physician.
Good point.
And that is where both Google, Amazon, and all of these, they all want to be the intermediary data provider between you and other organizations. Or other services. So it makes sense from that perspective. It's just, and that's where Facebook, honestly, it feels really strange that they didn't realize their privacy problem, given that this is what they wanted to do and where the market was going. So it feels kind of like they missed the opportunity, much like they missed mobile, and now they're kind of adapting to it.
And they may make it. So I went through I said, oh, what groups am I in? I'm in tons more groups than I could have possibly remembered. My favorite here is that I joined the I Like John C. Dvorak group.
Good of you.
And here's the better part. It was last updated 8 years ago.
Yeah. A vibrant, growing community on the Facebook. This, somebody pointed out in the chat room, has no ads on it. Is that going to be the future of Facebook, the no ad?
Well, this is actually the wrong thing to look at, because they're not even coming out with this web version for quite some time. This is a mock-up. Okay. What they're out with today is the mobile version.
Okay. Well, I'll just have to trust.
I don't know if they have an image of that, since you can't show us because you are snitty, snooty, and snotty.
Oh, I'm happy not on Facebook though. That's
snit, snoot, snot.
I am very happy.
Show title.
Let's see. Since I'm trying to find the mobile design.
I still like knee deep in snit.
I know how they're going to make their money back, though. They're turning Facebook back into a hookup app. Facebook's adding secret crushes, so it's basically Tinder. You could see which friends have the hots for you, and it'll match.
Is that how Tinder operates?
Yeah, it'll match you up. So if you indicate interest in somebody,
well,
you can't message them until they indicate interest in you. And that's apparently how this will work. This is part of the new Facebook dating, which isn't available here. 5 countries already launched. 14 more join the service today. Secret Crush lets you express interest in up to 9 friends. If that friend has opted into Facebook dating and likes you back, they get a notification saying someone likes you. If they pick you as their secret crushes, one of their 9 seems like a lot, but okay, you both get notifications. This is where all the money's going to be in the future, if you ask me. This is what Facebook was already all about from day one.
Okay. I'm going to apologize. I'm going to go on mute for most of the time because they're grinding up trees behind me.
Well, it's about time. Those gosh darn
I don't think
trees.
We're hearing it. Are we hearing it?
She's muting herself. When she came on, we heard it.
Oh.
Yeah. Anything else?
Now, people are going to accuse me of talking over or interrupting Stacey. So I want Karsten, make sure you when Stacey wants to talk, make sure it's clear as can be. I don't want to get accused of anything because tree grinding is going on.
You'll hear the trees grinding, Jeff, and you'll be like, oh, my God, what is that noise?
Stacy's here. Oh, no, she's really angry now.
When Stacy wants to talk, I'll just mute Jeff.
Hey, there you go.
That's fine. That's fine.
Nice. Do we care about the Oculus Quest and the Rift S?
Wait. While we're talking about privacy, can we talk about Google changing their data retention policies on their app's location?
Sure.
That was a terrible, terrible way of paraphrasing that. But Google is allowing you it'll give you 2 options, a 3-month or an 18-month time limit on how long it keeps your data. So you can now auto-delete your location history and web and app activity by either after 3 or after 18 months.
Or keep it until I delete it manually. Which is how it is right now.
Well, but manually deleting all of your stuff is pretty terrible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess it's kind of like, you know, deleting cookies from your website. You're going to have a really crappy experience for a little bit afterwards where you're like, ah, I've got to log into everything and nobody knows who I am anymore. So that's the downside of doing this.
So this isn't an app, but it's going to be in a new setting inside your Google account dashboard on mobile and on the web, a drop-down option that will allow you to select those time windows, 3 months or 8 months. It'll also cover not just location, but web and app activity. Things searched for, browsed in Google services, maps, search, Google Play. Older data will be deleted on an ongoing basis. This is a very good thing. And why not? Because honestly, Google probably gets much more value out of your most recent activity than out of your 18-month-old activity.
I do wish I could tell it to stop doing YouTube videos, but keep my, you know, maps history, but kill my web search history, you know? Like, there is a little bit more granularity.
I wonder if you can't in their dashboard.
I don't know. I don't have this option yet.
Yeah. This does not make a distinction. But, yeah. That might be the next thing, is get a little more granular. Because maps might, maybe, I like, actually, that's really a good idea, because I like to keep my location information as long as possible, because it's a great way for me to look back. I don't know. I'm not going to delete anything, but there you have it. How about, we were talking about the Oculus Quest and the Oculus Rift S available for pre-order. They ship in 3 weeks. I feel like this VR thing has just died on the tree here.
It works really well with my surround sound 8-track.
The Quest, both headsets use computer vision technology, Oculus Insight, which enables inside-out tracking via sensors built into the units, so you can navigate virtual and physical spaces in real time. The Quest runs on a Snapdragon 835, no wires and no PC, which is kind of cool. There'll be 50 titles available when the Quest debuts. Units are shipped with 5 preloaded demos: Beat Saber, Creed, Journey of the Gods, Space Pirate Trainer, and Sports Scramble. $399. You can order it now. As I said, it'll be come in 3 weeks. The Rift S is basically an updated Oculus Rift, but the new headset has reportedly much better optics, much higher resolution display. $399, much lower price.
Yeah,
as somebody who spent $1,500 on the original Oculus Rift, that's a big difference.
So are you? Do you order these things still, Leo? Or?
No, you know, we have the Vive, which is HTC's competitor, and the 16-year-old likes playing the Vive with his buddies. But I don't.
Do you ever use it? I mean, no. I don't. I'm not a game player, so I guess that's why I'm.
It's fun for gaming. I think it's. I don't know if this technology is going to take off. I was a little skeptical even in the beginning.
Me too.
Yeah. I'll have to ask Georgia Dow. She's going to be on Twit on Sunday. She and her husband actually bought a new house so that they could have not one, not two, but 3 virtual reality gaming rooms. So that all of them could play simultaneously.
Are they padded walls so you don't kill yourself bumping into walls?
Sure they are. I don't know, but we'll talk to her on Sunday. She's gonna be on Twit, and
she'll actually be on not this Sunday.
Oh, a week from
May
Sunday,
12th.
That's right. Okay.
Do you when she built it? Did she design them with different parameters, like basically how big does your VR room need to be?
It's a known number. I can't remember what it is, but yes, it had to be that big.
Huh.
But I don't think she padded the walls or did anything else. You just have to have a clear space of, I don't know, it's about 10 by 10 feet, something like that, 100 square feet. Somebody in the chat room is asking, great question, nothing original. Would Mark pay $2 billion for Oculus today?
Ooh, that is a good question.
I don't know.
I think the implied in that question is the answer that he shouldn't.
Well,
I mean, if you think about the focus on privacy, and you can create basically worlds where people can actually interact in a virtual environment and have their interactions be private, there's actually a lot of interesting ways you could make money there.
There was a lot of attention originally on the Oculus to those kinds of spaces. In fact, I think it was called Spaces. I don't hear a lot of talk about that anymore. It's really boiled down to playing games.
Right. But that's because the technology right now is so heavy, cumbersome. You really have to, and the content for it is game related. And because it's so expensive.
Right.
So, but if you do get a consumer oriented VR device and you create a way for people with minimal action on their part to interact with people, I think that could be good. I just don't think we're there yet.
Other announcements at F8. we're going from the macro to the micro. Now Instagram has new camera features. They said that we really don't want you to have to leave Instagram to get the picture. You want to be able to take it in Instagram. And actually, I think this is interesting. Likes are now less prominent. Maybe trying to eliminate that influencer stuff.
And this is Instagram under Adam Mosseri, who used to be in charge of Newsfeed. And there's an argument somewhere I saw online. I don't think it's on the rundown, but that Instagram becomes the old Facebook. It's the public place.
It looks more like Instagram is becoming the new Snapchat, but okay. I'll grant you that. Facebook Messenger is going to somehow focus on close friends.
Because you labeled the people in your family unit like close friends, or
because nothing's public.
Yeah. So it's really a one-to-one.
Well, yeah. Or a small group, but it's only people you've chosen to speak to.
Yeah. So that's F8. I don't know. We might have made a mistake not covering it, but
I think there's kind of a fairness question. They're a big company. The other thing, I wish that Amazon, because Amazon is so friggin' private. Wouldn't it be amazing if Amazon had a...
They do.
Conference.
And we actually have covered it last year.
But they don't have it. That's more.
Yeah.
That's about.
But you
AWS,
know what they're about
right?
to do?
Right.
No, in June, they're going to have something called Mars. Oh, Remars, which is going to be AI robotics and whatever the M's.
That reminds me. When's my racer coming? I think it's pretty soon.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm very excited.
Need to replace your bankrupt robot?
Oh, the Anki Cosmo. So isn't that sad?
We had Kevin write about what's going to happen to Anki and how this is sad. He's very sad. He picked the best picture for the story.
So Anki, which we covered quite a bit from the very first when they had a race car that followed a racetrack using cameras. It was a lot of fun. Then they came out with this little robot. You see the kids staring at it. It looks like a little mini bulldozer called a Cosmo. There were three generations of Cosmo. We reviewed all three and loved all three. Most recent one you could program with Python, and it seemed to have a lot of nice features. It was expensive. It was several hundred dollars. And apparently the market just wasn't enough.
So is this the robotic Theranos?
So no.
No, because they had a product. They actually shipped. Big difference.
The way it went down, it sounds like, okay, this is just me, and because I was at GigaOm and that shut down, so like
these abrupt shutdowns are weird, aren't they?
Yeah, I think what happened is an investor backed out, it looks like. It looks like someone either called something in, like a debt in, or an investor backed out at the last minute, leaving them.
They had $200 million in VC.
Well, they also had $100 million in revenue from 2017, which was before Vector was launched.
Right.
So if you've got that much revenue coming in, and I don't know if they were profitable at all, but that's not... That's not a small business. So, and the company basically said on Monday, they were like, okay, yeah, we're shutting down on Wednesday. You get a week severance.
Yeah, that's wild, isn't it? Means they had zero runway, or they were running out of runway and didn't tell anybody. Vector was $250. It's the most recent one. It had Amazon Echo built in, although the speaker was so bad, wasn't really practical.
You know, Kevin loved that thing.
We all loved it. I loved it. Yes.
And he used it for very kind of practical things. It followed him around as a mobile, basically Amazon Echo. And, you know, he was doing cool stuff with computer vision on it and cool stuff. So,
and he likes Python. It was Python programming.
And he loves Python.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very sad. And you're right. We don't know the whole story. That sounds right, though. Somebody pulled out at the last minute.
It just, it, I've seen that happen so many times with companies. An investor somehow basically screws over the company. It's sad.
That's why we do not have investors here at Twit.
Yeah.
So the Deep Racer, which is not nearly as cool as the Vector and was $400, will be coming July 10th. So I got a little ways to go.
Oh, this is the Amazon thing.
Yeah, this is the AI. The idea is you could it's an autonomous race car that you could program. And I thought it'd be kind of fun to play with this.
If it's a race car, don't you need to buy like four of them?
No, this is the wild thing. They're virtual racing leagues. You should tell Kevin to get this. It uses Python. It could be a good replacement for his Vector.
I think he's actually looking at, I mean, it's so recent, you know, he sent a bunch of questions in that have yet to be answered, but you know, they could open source the code. They could do lots of things.
We're going to try. I know you can't be here next week, and we're hoping to get Kevin in next week on the show. So maybe he'll tell us a little bit more about whatever happened.
Or you can read his blog post.
To Little Anki. Okay. Is that going to be on aboutchromebooks.com or Stacy on IoT?
No, it's on Stacy on IoT. Okay. You don't have to read it. I'm just saying.
Is it already there?
A good picture. Yeah, it's already there.
But he still hasn't heard from them yet.
I don't know if he's heard from them yet or not. I haven't checked the story for an update. Okay.
Ooh, Kevin. If my budget was $400, I'd buy the HP Chromebook X2 today.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have the X2 Windows version, the X2 Envy.
You like it?
Yeah, but it would be a good Chromebook.
It's top heavy.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those obviously convertibles. You know, I'm not really fond of those that much. I like a good laptop.
I need to buy a new Chromebook for my daughter for her graduation.
Oh. There's some very good choices, yes. And Kevin will have the recommendations.
Kevin will have it.
Yes.
Kevin, I'm coming to you.
I don't know if he's watching. These are good questions.
He usually does, doesn't he?
He usually does. But then he also, when we start talking about him, I usually get IMs from him saying something, commenting on it. So
we should have him on more often. Plus, it's fun to watch you and Kevin together here, too.
We can't
exist in the same place at the same time, though. Only on the podcast.
Okay. We could easily have a three-person show. There's no reason we can't do that. I don't think Mark announced this in his keynote, but he has built a sleep box for Priscilla.
I really did not want to click on the story, so I did not. But
yeah, I didn't either. I didn't do it either.
I thought about Michael Jackson and the hyperbaric chamber, and I was like, I don't know.
So the box sits on her nightstand. I think this is actually,
this is
totally cool. This is exactly what Mark Zuckerberg should be doing. The box sits on her nightstand and emits a soft glow between 6 and 7 a.m., which is when their daughters
usually wake up. Did you also think that she slept in it?
Yes, I did too. That's what I thought. I didn't click on it for the same reason.
It's one of those fancy like Hue light bulb clock.
I thought it was like a coffin thing. I was getting claustrophobic.
Yeah. I imagine Priscilla Chan waking up, like opening the lid and
I've made you a sleep box, honey. Come to the basement. The funny thing is there is such a thing already. Our sponsor Casper makes a really cool light called the Glow that does exactly.
Do you have one of those?
Yeah, I love it.
I want one so badly.
I think it's in my office on the desk. You set it to what time you want to wake up, and it's dark, but then it slowly raises the light.
Dozens of these.
It has some interesting, they pair, so you can have multiple ones, and they have some interesting other features. Like if you go to the bathroom, you could pick it up on its charging stand, and it will glow very dimly as you walk to the bathroom. It's like a candle, but it'll glow, and then you go back. Also, you can twist it. Mark, you didn't... You didn't really need to. I don't know why he did. Maybe he wanted to save the $100. You know, he can be kind of cheap. It probably cost him $10,000 to build Priscilla's sleep box.
That is a very well done executed box. Nice. I mean, it's very pretty. Now that I know it's not a coffin, I feel
better. His staff woodworkers.
Think he didn't build it himself? I would hope he'd build it himself.
This kind of thing. If he kills things, he builds things. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's the old saying.
Well, no.
If you kill things, you build things. It's just right. It's the only So this is actually the Glow has a really clever technology. So that's the charger. So it only has one charging pin. And on either side, there's this circular conductive ring. So any way you place it on the stand, it will charge. And if you turn it, it turns the light up or down.
Oh, yeah, it's really well designed.
It's really clever. It's also the battery's dead. I'll charge it up, and we'll set it to glow slowly. So Zuck got 478,000 likes on that Instagram post. Why is there a Sharpie sitting next to the box? That's just the kids are going to come in and draw all over it, Mark. Maybe that's the plan.
I think in Silicon Valley, there's a rule that you have to have Post-its in every room.
Oh, yeah. In case you have a
design thinking moment.
Yeah.
Once the light has started,
new technology has propelled.
Take a quick sniff of the Sharpie to wake the rest of the
Karsten, I don't know.
He's being snitty today, Karsten.
Huffing Sharpies to wake up. I'm pretty sure. Isn't she a pediatrician? She's probably not for that.
Huffing Sharpies. I don't know. Maybe Mark will start talking about his woodworking on his podcast. I would if I were him. Are you excited about one-day shipping for Amazon Prime members?
Yeah.
I am too, but I have a feeling the people in the fulfillment centers are not so thrilled. They're going to spend $800 million to expand Prime from two-day to one-day shipping. They said it won't be easy. It won't be easy, but nothing worth doing is easy, is it?
Is this really worth doing?
Yes, because I want it now. I want it now, Mommy, now.
Well, it's how to compete with Walmart.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, no, it's just a step in the path, because eventually they'll have it so you order it and you get it that, you know, an hour later. That's, I'm sure, the goal. If I were Jeff.
Dropped on your head via drone.
Yeah. They have approvals for drones, right? I think they got approvals. Mm-hmm.
They do.
Ring doorbell, which is no longer a sponsor, but was for a long time, and I have a Ring, and I love a Ring, has done something that Neiman Labs is maybe looking a little askance at. Ring wants to start producing crime news.
That is not true. So
they're looking to hire somebody with the title Managing Editor News.
Scroll down for the update.
Oh.
We'll work on an exciting new opportunity.
Josh Benton wrote a whole piece on The Atlantic about this.
Oh. Yeah. Okay,
but they said that they've already had this role. It's not what people are making it out to be.
Well, it's okay. So they've received a little heat, I think rightly so, for this Neighbors app. It even works within the Ring doorbell. You can see crime in your area. Mm-hmm. And in my area, you could say maybe it's a little racist.
Oh, yeah. No, and I've talked to Jamie about how to combat racism.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not for the Neighbors app, but the way that the
media I'm not against it. Because the idea is that you could keep up. We often have package thieves as well. And if there's a package thief in the neighborhood, people share it. So I think it's kind of useful. I just throw out the stuff where, what's that Chinese lady doing? Although there was a weird one. There was a really weird one. Actually, it tracks you in the same way the police blotter of a small town newspaper is attractive. There was a weird one. There was a woman, older woman, 70s. She had a big bouquet of flowers, scissors, a water vase. She was doing something on the person's porch. She said, I don't know this lady. The lady looks up, sees the Ring doorbell, flips it off, then gathers up the flowers, the scissor, the vase, and leaves. And they're trying to figure out. Finally, somebody said on there, I know this lady. She goes around and she cuts the flowers in your yard, makes a bouquet. So she had probably cut your neighbor's flowers, hustled over to your stoop to make the bouquet, and then saw the Ring and knew she was busted, so flipped you off and then left. But she was a flower thief.
What a strange thing to do.
But see, without a Ring doorbell, you wouldn't even know.
Yeah. I mean, the issue here is that it is in a time when strangers' danger is rampant.
This really does promote that.
The fear is that it promotes that. And Josh Benton, who's the editor of Demon Lab, who's really, really good, his argument, I think, if I got it right, is that a company that sells devices to deal with this, to call themselves an editor or journalism or news, is a bit of a conflict. Now, interestingly, when I was in the UK last, I saw Ring being advertised. None of that scare stuff. It was, oh, good. It was back to the old convenience argument that Ring made.
Yeah.
And now Ring's gone to it. Because it used to be Ring said, oh, good, you can find out whether the package there. That's nice. You can do this. You can do that. Now it's, there's criminals everywhere, and we're going to stop them together.
You know, right? It's sad. It's sad, well, because that's what it always descends to.
That's what sells products.
Yeah.
I mean, fear sex, and...
Fear sells... What? But, you know, when we do the Ring ads, we don't... I always focused on the good stuff, you know, the delivery and stuff like that. They didn't tell us how to slant it. But when Amazon purchased them, I think that's when they stopped advertising on Twitch. So I don't know what their current strategy is. I do have some concerns. But it's the same kind of concerns about the neighborhood watch and the committees. And, you know, it's not so far from the, you know, the committee possitatus. It's not so far from vigilantism, right? Here, see the glow, the little glow? You can't, because it's... Turn off the lights.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, we can.
You see the little glow?
Yeah, we can see it.
This is the bathroom glow. So I shook
turn
it.
Turn off
like,
the lights.
I shook it like
and
that.
And I glow.
It's like a little candle.
To the extreme.
Or you could scare the children. Hello, children. Is it time for bed? It's very... See, look at how it... Did you see that? How it goes from the top to the bottom? It flows.
It's nice.
Isn't that cool? And then you can turn it up and down. Welcome to This Week in Scare Tactics. You could turn it up and down. I think you can. Maybe it's not doing it right now. But this, I guess when it's off, you can do that. Oh, there you go.
I think you should do the show this way. It's Bedtime with Leo.
Anyway, Mark, $100. Casper, the glow light.
Is it 100? I thought it was 79.
They just raised the prices.
What?
Casper did a whole press release, by the way, sponsor, did a whole press release on why they had to raise it. I haven't read it yet.
Casper.
But apparently the costs went up or something. I mean, I'm sure there's a good reason. They're not. I don't think this is their prime business.
Yeah, they're not in the nightlight business.
Right. Although the engineering on this is really kind of
the engineering on its side. I posted a Bolt Innovations did a teardown on this. And it was actually really interesting.
Wasn't that great? That's actually why I got this. Why I said, wait a minute, that's cool. I got to get it. It was $89. It's now $129.
Waha!
Yeah.
Sorry.
Costs associated with making the product have gone up since our last production run. They probably priced it optimistically in the first place.
Price to sell.
I think $129 is not out of the market particularly.
I mean, can you read by it?
Yes. And it's battery powered, so it is actually great for blackouts. You know, it's an emergency light.
If I could read by it, then yes, $129 for a bedside table lamp is fine. But if I can't read by it.
There's an app and all that stuff.
I don't need an app. I hate apps. I'm so over apps.
I got so many apps. So many apps. Let's do the Google changelog. Speaking of apps.
The Google changelog.
I almost this morning, almost went out and bought a Google Wear OS watch. Then I realized there is a chance, small but finite, that they will announce a new one on Tuesday. So I'm going to wait.
What motivated you to go out
this
morning?
They've added new features. They actually seem to still have some love for Wear OS. They've added something they're calling Tiles. As you swipe left on your watch, there are now four informational tiles. Actually, more than four. Goals, which I guess is tasks. Next event, that's your calendar. Forecast, weather, heart rate, headlines, and timer. So this is actually a big change in functionality for the watch. I think that's pretty cool. And obviously, you can control which of those you see and so forth. They say the new tiles will be rolling out to your Wear OS by Google smartwatch over the next month. But I suspect we'll hear more at Google I.O. Maybe Wear OS isn't dead, right? Here she is running around with her Wear OS watch. Do you wear neither of you wear a Wear OS watch.
No. I have one I bought and haven't turned it on.
Yeah. I had a bunch of them, but then I kind of thought it was over for Wear OS. But
maybe not. You would not be the only one.
Yeah.
Still the rudeness factor. When with somebody who has either watch, either brand, yeah. the moment when they and I know they're just reading the same way they were with a phone, but I think, oh my God, oh, I'm talking too much. Oh, it's going too long. Oh no, I'm going to lose them.
You can spend as much as $3,000 on a Tag Heuer Android Wear watch, Wear OS watch, or as little as $150. There's quite a surprising variety of watches out there. So, there you have it. Wear OS is not dead. We already did Alphabet. We already, Google Docs are now getting native. Well, maybe not.
What?
I'm just getting a 404 on that page. So maybe that's.
I saw that too. I meant to alert that
Google
was a 404.
Google Docs pick up native offline support. No more browser extensions needed. That's a good thing. That means your Pixel Book will be a little bit more useful. Yep. Android TV. Wow. Has do you have an Android TV? Does anybody have an Android TV? 5,000 apps and games, up from about 3,000. A year ago. The problem is, where are you going to get an Android TV? There's, as far as I'm concerned, there's only one to get. I love it, and I have it, the NVIDIA Shield. But honestly, there isn't. It's not as capable as any of the other streamers, including Roku. So maybe it'll help to get some more apps. The Google Earth time lapses now are on mobile. These are really cool. You can go back 35 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And see how
we should look at Austin.
There was life before Google?
Yeah. 1984 to 2018. It's really cool to see how stuff changes. Now, there's
cool or depressing?
Yeah. Well, look at Las Vegas. You want to see? Yeah. So let me see. Where do I get the... how do I start it? Oh, play. So you can see Las Vegas get built up by quite a bit.
And the lake going down.
Yeah. Let me go back to... does it start at the beginning automatically, I wonder, or do I have to... let's go back to 1998. Yeah. So that's kind of fun. There's lots of different places that you can get. How about the bushfires in South Australia? You want to see those? You could do this now on mobile, I guess is the new thing. This has been around for a while.
Are those fires?
Well, there's the destruction. Yeah, the destruction.
Okay.
Yeah. We're going to be in Dubai in November. This is along with Shanghai, one of the fastest growing regions in the world. Watch as Dubai goes from a sleepy living fishing village to, oh my God, they're building islands.
And you can't even see how high it's going.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't see the skyscrapers. Yeah.
What's bringing you to Dubai?
Cruise. We're going to start in Athens. We're going to stop in Jerusalem and Petra, Jordan. It's going to be really cool. I know.
I'm so jealous. I've wanted Petra's like, oh.
You know what I did that's, this is really geeky. So I've been trying to find a good way to cross-platform way to share our itinerary, our schedule with Lisa. So I just made a web page on Google Sites, so she'll know all the places we're going. And as I book schedules, stuff, then she'll know ahead of time. And then I'm even putting in like here's a little Dubai video to get her ready for the trip. So there you go. That's pretty geeky.
rising from the warm shores of the Persian Gulf. So,
by the way, really easy to do with Google Sites.
Oh.
Sites is awesome. Took me about, took me a couple hours. Did you see, I thought this was really cool, but it did make me think they're not working too hard in the London office. Google's London office, they're actually, the employees have made a sticky note art gallery on the glass walls of the office.
In Google's London office, we use pixel art to bring life to the building.
Pixel art. Using post-its.
We have over 200 people that have contributed to at least one art piece.
I love pandas, so myself and my entire team worked on the panda emoji. It was a very good team bonding experience.
So if your Google Assistant isn't working very well, now you know why.
I look a little bit like Mr. T, but I quite like it.
The most important thing is how you peel the post-it off of the pad. Turn it over and peel from the backside down at an angle. Then, when you stick it on the glass, it's very smooth.
Good Lord.
I am making the 8-bit version of Link in the original Legend of Zelda. I find when you're really stressed, you should go off and do something completely not related and have that kind of space out time.
It was a lot of video game related art, and for me, Calvin and Hobbes makes me happy.
Really nicely done, isn't it?
And I thought that that might appeal to other people.
I think if there's somebody you don't like, it's terribly British, passive aggressive to put doodle art in front of them.
Block their view. With a giant post-it.
Oh, it's art? You can't take that down. No, it wasn't you. Be very British.
Chrome 74 has arrived for Enterprise. The only reason I'm mentioning this is because it's Kevin's article and about Chromebooks. Okay, yes, I accept your cookies. I accept them. If you want to read about all the new features in Chrome 74, nowhere better than aboutchromebooks.com. I actually really like the PDF annotation support. That's really useful.
That is.
You don't need a third-party tool anymore. And USB cameras can be used in place of the native built-in cameras if you want to use them for document scanning or microscopes, and that'll work with Google. It's pretty cool. Audio support for Linux apps, too. That's audio playback only, but still. Yay! And finally, Google launches CallJoy, a virtual customer service phone agent for small businesses. It launched today, aimed at 30.2 million small business owners. It's a low-cost customer service agent that blocks spam calls, provides callers with basic business information, and redirects customers to complete their requests. But I presume it's duplex. $39 a month, no matter how big or small your business. Let's hear some call joy.
When I started, business took off. Almost instantly, the phone became a burden. I wasn't prepared for the volume of calls and customer questions that were coming in constantly. I started this business to devote more time to cooking.
To making meatballs.
With CallJoy, I can get back to cooking and never miss a phone call.
Do you think this guy is actually a chef? No. He's an actor, right? No chef ever delivered a line that well. I'm just saying. Every once in a while, actually every episode, on Billions. Now, they bring in somebody real, famous.
I was thinking today watching the... they do. Oh, no. In fact, I want to have that pizza.
That pizza is interesting, isn't it? And they had three porn stars on last night.
Well, yeah, they were playing themselves.
You wouldn't have recognized them. Don't worry.
Let's not talk about Billions, because I am planning on watching it. I just am waiting for all the episodes to be out.
No, we're talking about the food. It's okay.
It's not anything to do with the plot. Nothing to do with the plot in that case, but it's not. But, you'll see. Yeah. But yeah, there's some. Okay. There's they get some. Is he a famous New York pizza chef?
Oh yeah. You know, there's a blog just about the food places. Look up Billions Food.
I know they had the ramen guy, Ivan Ramen, serve him ramen. But you always know they're real people because they're surrounded by these great actors, and their performances are so bad. You go, well, clearly he's an actual chef, not this guy. Anyway, let's continue.
Call time so wait. I'm going to show it to you. You're going to like this.
Okay.
So we're in the rundown now.
No more news. We got some digression to go. Here, let's do it.
Exactly. No, so there's the Fun with Damien dining guide.
I guess that's the Google change log.
Way to go, Karsten.
Shot to hell. Okay.
Jeez. Karsten.
Where did you put this?
The hook.
Yeah, really. Where'd you put the fun with Damien? No,
in the chat, in the rundown.
Okay.
That doesn't belong in the change log. We had to end the change log. And
yes,
now,
we do.
Now, Jeff, please.
Now it's digression time.
With your digression.
See it, Leo?
No. Fun with...
It's in the chat, in the log.
Okay. Fun with
Damien.
But
Stacey can see it.
Can you see it?
I wasn't actually looking.
I don't see it in the
I think you put it in somebody else's.
I think you put it in the chat,
Jeff, where you always put things.
Of
the other category.
Yeah.
Well, I'll put it down to the other. Yeah, okay, sorry. Here it goes.
He always tries to use the actual chat.
Yeah, don't, there. It never works. Don't use the chat. Just use other.
Damien Lewis is the star.
Yeah.
Okay, fun with Damien. The Billions Season 3 Dining Guide. So, Keen's Steakhouse. Babbo.
Don't listen, Stacy.
Momofuku Ko.
It's okay. It's okay. Nothing's serious. Stacy, for you on audio, Stacy is taking her earbuds out.
Can I mute Stacy?
The funny thing is that after the guy came to their house to make these really fancy pizzas, they take him to his old pizza joint in Brooklyn or wherever to have real pizza because those did not look.
Well, there's two different pizza places. One is a gourmet pizza place.
Right.
The other one is the place that,
like, the real
Axe used to hang out all the time.
Right. Yeah. Wow, look at this. This is they really do a lot of
all the research on every place. Yeah. So there was something else I wanted to eat desperately. Oh, the ice cream place.
Are you still talking about this?
Yes. Kosar's Bagels and Bialy since 1936. Oh, there it is. Tom Colicchio. He was a top chef. Okay. And Snack Bar. That's the restaurant in Atlanta that's famous for its burgers. So they bring Wags and Axe a burger that looks like it would kill you.
Yep.
Wow. That's interesting. They really do shoot great.
It's Brian Koppelman. It's a shtick.
Yeah.
Yeah. He really makes a big point.
Yeah. That's interesting. Donahue's Steakhouse. Okay. People are no longer listening to the show. So it's just the three of us.
So Leo, I was also thinking about, I don't know if this was happening. You know how people make mockery of TED Talks, which deserve?
Yes.
Has anyone done a good mockery of the keynotes? Because there's just this. So I was talking to my friend, and it's this shtick that's now become, every keynote's the same.
I have seen parody keynotes, yes.
You have? Okay.
Oh, I haven't seen them. Seems like that's... something we need.
It's ripe.
Can I go back to call Joy? I just want to hear it. I want, the chef has been standing here with his meatballs.
Sorry.
I think it's time.
He's always first to answer to make sure those calls are directed appropriately. Most people are calling to order.
I want to hear call Joy.
The text back feature converts those calls to action. That means my phone is ringing less and my orders are going up. Call Joy doesn't just help me manage phone calls. It gives me more control over my business and my customers.
I
want to
hear it.
Call Joy. Answer with intelligence.
We just watched a whole stupid video without an actual demo.
That was your choice. You did it.
It's my fault.
See, my fear on this is that people are going to start using it to robocall me.
Yep.
Then I'll just end up pushing the call screen.
We already have enough problems.
On my Pixel,
yeah.
And then Google will just be talking to Google.
Oh yeah, because the Pixel, you can do that. You can reject it and have them
just push. I always do this with
all inbound.
All inbound calls. Now yeah. I just push screen call.
That explains a lot. Okay, I don't know where we went off target, but that is
my fault.
So Julian Assange got his first sentence of 50 weeks in the UK jail, spelled GAOL. They're still negotiating Assange's extradition to the U.S.
Oh, my God. Is that pronounced jail?
Yeah.
Yes.
I literally only read that. Yeah, I just thought it was a gowler or a gailer.
That's why we spelled it J-A-I-L for you Yanks who don't know how to read.
Cow.
We knew if we called it a jail, you would say gayol. And there's nothing gay about the old Bailey.
Right. So the joke on Twitter is which embassy will he serve the sentence in?
The jailers are going to get rid of him in 30 weeks. They're going to say, I'm sorry, we don't want you anymore. Anyway, I don't want to joke about it. It's much more serious than that. So he will be in a British jail and then perhaps extradited. Although there's some question about that because one of the rules of extradition, I think we mentioned this before, is that he can only be extradited on the charge that he is... that the extradition is. They can't add charges after the fact. So the charge they have is kind of slender, this charge of offering to hack the emails to hack the NSA he made apparently in a chat conversation with Chelsea Manning. That seems like a fairly flimsy premise. But if they do extradite him on that grounds, they can't charge him with anything extra.
But now they have a year to think up a better.
Now they can come up with better. Yeah, maybe this.
I still think Trump's gonna pardon him.
I have the. You want to know my really complex conspiracy theory?
Sure.
So a lot.
Let me get my tinfoil, please.
Yeah, really. A lot of the redacted Mueller report, almost all of the redactions, were because it's an ongoing matter.
Mm-hmm.
They needed an ongoing matter with Julian Assange to redact all the WikiLeaks stuff. And all of the WikiLeaks stuff was, in fact, redacted.
Ooh.
So they come up with this. They say, Julian, just come out. We're going to put you in jail in the UK for 50 weeks. We will never extradite you. We will never charge you. But this way we can redact all those really bad, because those are the ones that are the most direct contacts with Roger Stone, Julian Assange, and the Russians. That was all redacted. It's, of course, Roger Stone's stuff is still a matter of current action.
Yes, that's interesting.
That's like a really crazy, that's QAnon level cray cray.
But that presumes that the world is that well organized. It's the problem with conspiracies.
I think the world is that well organized, honestly. But then I've been watching Veep.
Jonas for president.
Is that not the? Oh my God! I have to watch that show 5 times just to get all the jokes. It goes so fast.
I know. I love it so much.
So good, and it is replaying in a very satiric way all that we've been going through over the last few years. Instead of the Russians, it's the Chinese. But otherwise, I think we could reasonably.
Wow! This is swift. This is efficient. This is. Well, Leo, I would like to get some friends and family equity in the company, in your company, because I know when you're sold for $200 million.
Cheddar.
Like cheddar.
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 Cheddar. Cheddar. That's a lot of cheese. What is cheddar?
You know, cheddar? Financial news network for millennials.
Yeah, they're very good. John Steinberg, who's very good, who I know, was at BuzzFeed and then at... the Daily Mail, and then he left to start his own company, which does financial news in video, aimed mainly at younger people, and he's got a whole bunch of shows, and it's really good.
Well, that's actually about the right price. If they had $25 million in revenue in 2018, it's about 8x revenue. That's about 8 to 10 times revenue. Oh, no, it's usually 8 to 10 times profit. Sorry. What's their profit?
Don't know.
Bet it's not 25 million. You always,
I don't know if it's a profitable media company.
Yeah,
those are rare.
So you're actually much better off not making money, I found out, when you're trying to sell a business.
Yeah.
If you don't have if you don't have profit, there's no multiple of zero. So they just make up a number.
Right.
Cheddar did get 40 million households. So they're on Dish, Sling, AT&T's, DirecTV Now, mostly over the top. But still, 40 million households. Tech TV had 41 or 44 million households and sold for more than $300 million. So now it was cable households, but and that was Tech TV did not make money except for one quarter that they faked it. So good for Steinberg.
The website was always profitable.
The website made $1 million a year, rain or shine. The Tech TV website. That's because they didn't pay you guys anything.
Nope.
The deal for Cheddar, all in cash.
Cash, but he's going to buy some Altice stock.
Is Altice the Steinberg company that bought him?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Altice also bought Cablevision on Long Island.
They're a cable company.
I never heard of them. They're a cable company.
They own
in the
News
US?
12, which is in the tri-state area. Nice. For cable customers.
Well, good for you, Mr. John Steinberg, Cheddar executive and founder. Good for you. You know, I should have just, instead of This Week in Tech, I should have named this network This Week in Tech for Millennials. That was my mistake.
Well, true. Leo, it doesn't help that you're old and people like me on the show are old.
Yeah, I'm only Gen X, so I gotta say.
I love Stacey out.
I need more kids.
You need those hot millennials.
I love our audience, but they're not millennials.
I put this in the rundown just to get Jeff's blood pressure up a little bit.
Oh, no. Why?
You must love the New York Times Privacy Project.
Oh, it's just driving me nuts because it's full moral panic.
At least they mark everything opinion. Actually, I thought this was a clever idea. What they did is they bought ads using all the traditional methods. But the ad didn't look like an ad. It simply said things like, well, here's an example of an ad. This ad thinks you're trying to lose weight and still love bakeries.
Both things can be true.
Absolutely. I'm one of I probably would get that ad.
That they're both true, actually.
Yeah. This ad thinks you're male, actively consolidating your debt, and are a high spender at luxury department stores. They what even ad? Said, here's now the peep the ad brokers they were buying from would not say where the data came from. These are aggregators who get data from a lot of places. Most data providers say the Times declined to tell us where their data comes from or how they built their models. So the sources in the ads below come from the ad experts who helped us create the campaign. And by the way, this experiment would be blocked on Facebook because they ban most ads that say how you've been targeted. You don't want to look behind the curtain. I think this is a good. Has anybody seen these ads? I haven't seen these ads, but I run a Brave browser, which is an ad blocking browser. So this ad says thinks you're a female registered Democrat and are likely to vote for the sitting president.
I don't understand this ad. Where's the ad?
That's what the ad would look like.
That's what they're buying. They're telling you basically how you're being targeted.
So they're buying ads that the ad says how you're being targeted. The second page of the ad says you're being watched. Are you okay with that? Introducing the Privacy Project from the New York Times. So it is subsequently an ad for the New York Times. But the point of the ad is to say to the ad viewer, this is who we think you are.
Yeah, it's offering transparency in a lot of ways.
I think it's really interesting. I haven't seen. I would like to see these ads.
Is this the targeting the Times did?
Yes, they bought these ads
for moms who they bought people in these.
What's the big deal? What's the effing big deal?
Because it is not transparent, and you can. I mean, because generally, when you see an ad for like, if I'm a mom who I think am going to vote for Trump or whatever, maybe a PAC will target a specific type of. Trump really loves women ad towards me, right? And I'd see that and I wouldn't understand why I was seeing that. But now
the only difference. Sorry, Stacey. I thought you were done. Go ahead.
I think it's a great idea. I mean, yeah, maybe you could say seeing that ad, so what? But at least.
So you bought an ad on All in the Family because you wanted to get liberals.
Well, that's
There's
the point.
There's no difference.
There is a difference. These are much more granularly targeted.
Because it's possible.
Yeah.
But welcome to the future of media.
But people don't understand that. They don't understand how quickly and closely they can be targeted. And I would say if you see something that says you are likely to be a credit risk who still likes to buy fancy goods, that's actually something you should be aware of. And you may not realize that you fit in that group.
Let me just go back to the old days. I'm old enough to remember when we used Axiom, and direct mail has done that forever.
Right.
Forever. With more data on you than anybody has, and with your actual name and actual address. I can go to Axiom. I do this for my students. I can go to Axiom now. I haven't done this in a while, but I've been on the past where I said, okay, you want me to creep you out, students? I can go in to Axiom and get the names and addresses of women within 2 miles who have this kind of car, this kind of education, and so on and so forth. And that's the way that business has worked for 40 years.
40 years. I was going to say that because I interviewed them way back in the 80s or the 90s. In fact, the Times quotes Axiom. saying, well, it's not a science. We predict, for instance, whether you'll buy an SUV by looking at people who did buy SUVs, then checking whether you live in a similar region, you're about the same age, you share similar interests. So it's really kind of a predictive model, a guess almost.
Yeah, exactly. So a friend of mine started a company that was then sold to AOL, where he did advertising where if you came into the New York Times to the travel section and then you left to go to weather.com, that data point about you that you looked at a travel section, which is really makes you really, really valuable, carried with you. This is the beginning of retargeting and everything we had before, right? So he was at the very beginning of helping to invent this. But the thing that he taught me was a lot of the correlations made no sense. This is the argument that my friend David Weinberger makes in his new book, Everyday Chaos, where A-B testing and machine learning and such comes up with a prediction, as you just said, Leo, of a behavior for which there's no necessary explanation. It's just, yeah, people who have bought SUVs in the past have these characteristics. We have no idea why. We're not targeting those people per se. We're just taking data we have, people who bought SUVs, and trying to find similar correlations to get them to buy more SUVs. Nothing really sinister about that. It's just the way advertising has worked for a long time. It just has more data now.
Yes, I actually agree with you, Jeff. But I still thought it's a great campaign.
Carsten, put that on the rundown. This is the time when Leo...
No, I think it's a great campaign. I think it is good to let people know about this. It's good to let people know about this. It's not good to use that as a way of generating clicks.
Well, the Times is just jealous because the Times...
They can't do it.
Times has had more... Well, no, the Times has had more data points on people than most any media company because they started the paywall, or the registration, rather,
early.
That's
right, yeah.
And they asked you certain things that they wanted from you. And they have a reading history, and they've targeted ads to this. I haven't read the story, so I don't know whether they admit their own sins. But believe me, the Times maxes out as much of this as they can possibly do.
Yeah.
They just can't do sure. as much because they don't know as much.
Right.
I am still – are you upset about this, Jeff? I am very upset about this. I subscribe to the New York Times, and they want me to pay $5 a month for their food site.
Oh, yeah. I do, too. I do both.
I really resent the heck out of it.
I know, but you get a lot for the food site. You get all the recipes going back 100 years, and you get all
their business book.
There's a lot of good things in that food site that you don't get just because you could get the newspaper.
Well, but they still have some of the recipes. That's what drives me nuts. I'm like,
yeah.
If I click on this, is it going to – it works. Oh, good.
Yeah. But Stacey, that is the model. They want to come up with more of those things. So when they tell you how many digital subscribers they have, it's not all to the New York Times. It's to Crosswords – and food and such.
Oh.
I pay for crosswords too, actually.
I don't pay for crosswords.
Also important news, I'm going to put it in the rundown right now. I'll put it in the rundown because I've learned my lesson now because Carsten yelled at me.
The
Guardian breaks even. That's a big deal. The Guardian was always, as the joke, the line
oh,
was.
Oh, I'm thrilled because they do not have a paywall.
Precisely. So they did a couple things about this. One, they always called themselves profit-seeking, just somehow they could never find the profit. Now they've at least found break-even. And full disclosure is I worked with The Guardian on their membership strategy. And they learned quickly in, it wasn't a membership strategy. It was a begging strategy. Brilliant woman named Amanda Mickel basically runs it. And Kath Viner, the editor, at the end of every story has a piece that says, you should feel very guilty right now with a foreboding English accent. Because you should help pay for this.
I see this every time. By the way, I have not yet paid for it. But since you're here,
you should.
We have a small favor to ask.
They did an offsite with readers some time ago in this process, in this strategic process. And the readers said, how many of you would pay for The Guardian? Oh, some number went up. How many of you would pay for The Guardian to be free for the rest of the world? Every hand went up.
Oh,
so
wow.
They made The Guardian into a cause, which is what it is. And so this is not a lot of people call membership another word for subscription. That's not what they're doing here because you're not buying access to content. You are supporting The Guardian for the good of the world.
It's like very when you donate to Wikipedia.
Yes.
Which
yes.
I do.
Or NPR.
I give a monthly donation to Wikipedia. Yeah. You
give a donation.
I should get because I use The Guardian. We frequently use The Guardian for our shows, so I'm going to give them a buck. Yeah.
Tax write-off.
No, actually, I don't think it is. I don't know. In the U.S., it might go to their foundation.
No, it doesn't have to be a nonprofit. It's owned by a trust. It's a business expense.
The truth is, Stacey,
I deduct the New York Times subscription. I deduct all the subscriptions because it's a business expense.
Yes, no, I was just thinking as like Wikimedia is to the foundation. That's a charity. So that's tax revenue.
Yeah.
But we deduct them as business expenses.
Then there's just branding it as a cause. It's not actually a cause.
Well, truthfully, because of the tax laws in the United States, you have to give so much in charity to exceed the, what is it, 2 or 4% of the adjusted gross income that you really don't get to deduct charity unless you are really a big giver. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you can deduct all business expenses from dollar one. So
Schedule C.
Don't people donate 10% of their income to charity?
Yeah, they're supposed to. That's tithing.
Says God.
Well, I know, but that's I don't know.
But they take, what is it, 4%? I think it's 4%. So the first 4%, you don't get to deduct. You get deduct the second 6%.
Okay. I was like, wait, no, people donate more than 2 to 4%, right?
No.
Oh.
You're very generous. You donate, you really donate 10%?
We try to. I don't know if we don't always hit that exactly, but yeah.
Good.
Well, going from Stacey's generosity and profundity, I'm going to go to one more story that I'm curious to hear your reactions to. Burger King and the Impossible Burger.
Oh, it's so good if they can cook them correctly. I'm so excited about this.
I think they might be able to with the because they flame them and all that.
Yeah, well, no, the challenge is a lot of companies where you get the Impossible Burger, they cook it too long, and it's not good.
Can I tell you something about these so-called flame-broiled burger at Burger King? It is not flame-broiled to order. They flame-broil it
long before.
Perhaps at the store, perhaps somewhere else. Then they bring it to the store, and they microwave it, and the hint that's happening is the ding right before your order gets delivered.
Well, they put it through the grill thing. Then they put it in this plastic thing.
You've watched too many ads.
Actually, go to Burger King and watch what happens.
They put it in a microwave. It goes ding.
After they put it through the thing. But here's the issue. Should a pickle on a burger be hot?
No.
Well, that's the problem with microwaving the burger. The pickle becomes hot.
You don't microwave the pickle. You assemble the burger later.
You just microwave the
You never worked in fast food, clearly, Jeff.
Oh, I did.
Where did you work?
Ponderosa Steakhouse. Haven't I told you the story of my finger?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That was real food, though, that even though it was a chain. I worked at McDonald's. I know fast food. Yeah, so don't overcook it is the key.
This is a big mistake, but it was the only place I could get it near here, at White Castle. Big mistake.
Yeah, they do it on their sliders. It's not good?
No, because they steam it, and it was mushy.
Don't steam a hamburger.
Yeah, that's what they do. Well, some people sous vide hamburgers, but then you have to like char it on the outside.
Yeah,
there.
I have a little torch for that.
Yeah, there's a torch for that.
So now the chat room says I'm wrong. You can look into the Burger King and see the flames.
Yeah, it's there. That's true. They're right. They just might do it an hour beforehand.
Okay. And then microwave it later.
And then they assemble and microwave, yes.
Burger King cooks its burgers over a flame grill. They use a broiler, and you load frozen patties onto a tray, then shove them in. It's a flame grill inside. If the broiler messes up, then you have to count the entire load as a waste and cook more. Okay. If you see smoke coming out of the roof, then you know they're cooking.
True.
Is it like the hot sign on Krispy Kremes?
Yeah.
Because that is awesome.
Or a pope has been elected. One or the other. Our show today brought to you. Are we done? Have we done? Have we said everything important?
Yes, now I wanted to get the Impossible Burger. We're done.
Yeah, actually.
Now I'm hungry.
One of our continuity people, Sarah, is a vegetarian. She's all excited about the availability of the Impossible Burger at Burger King. She's all excited about that. Is it out now or not yet?
No, it's coming. They did it in St. Louis, and it obviously passed the test, so now they're going to roll it out. But they haven't said where.
Has anybody had? Well, you had it, but it was steamed at a White Castle.
Oh, no, I've had Impossible Burgers before. I've had several. It depends on how it's prepared. It's good if it's prepared correctly.
It's got to be rare.
Well, no, it just has to not be cooked. It goes from good to overcooked really fast.
Got it. Don't overcook it. Okay. Our show today brought to you by Capterra. If you're in a company and you use software for your company, and I think we all do, but we call it line of business software. Often that software is old, out of date. You know how you know if you're still required to use Windows 98 at work, or Internet Explorer 8, or Windows Vista, or XP. That means that they got that software and nobody kept it up to date. Nobody's fixed it. No, whoever wrote it is long gone. There is a better way. Capterra. Capterra doesn't sell software. It helps you find software for your business. And almost any business, over 700 categories of software, CMS, email marketing, IT service, SEO, workflow management, yoga studio management, dental office software, whatever it is, it's there. And it's not just one or two. It's every program in that category, plus 850,000 reviews, verified reviews by real users, 30,000 new fresh reviews available every month, 1,000 every day. So this is a really vital, exciting place. Millions of people use it every month to find modern software for your business. Look at all these different programs. And the user interface couldn't be better. So pick a category, construction management software, let's say, or I don't know, pick one, Carson. There's all sorts of, you can see all the categories. It's just crazy. And then once you're in that category, cemetery software. Nice choice, Carson. I bet the names are really great. Then once you're in there, you're going to get the full selection, but you can narrow it down with the filters. Like, do you want it on the hard drive or do you want it on the web? Do you want to manage, I don't know, what are some of the categories? Cemetery software.
You can do grave search.
Grave search. Mapping. Yeah. Okay. Embalming services, anything. So you narrow it down. You can create a comparison chart of up to four different programs. So you can look at Semify. Wow. And then you can compare them. And Plotbox. Plotbox Cemetery Solutions. You know what? It's probably, look at it, it's 5 stars. We narrowed it down. It's a 5-star. So then read the reviews. People who actually use the program. Maybe it's the perfect program for you. But find out before you buy. Now, I know you would pay a lot of money for this service, but the best part about Capterra, it's free. Not freemium, free, like free forever. Capterra believes software makes the world a better place because software can help every organization become a more efficient, more effective version of itself. This is awesome. You know, people love Capterra so much. That's why they get 1,000 new reviews every single day, because people want to share back. No matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution fast. Check out Capterra's free website today at capterra.com/twig. 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 We thank them for their support, and we thank you for supporting us by using that special URL. Capterra, software selection simplified. Stacy, do you have anything to share with us?
I do, sort of. This is a little dicey, but I'm doing it because I hate when companies screw this up. So, with that in mind, I am linking to somebody else's stuff because I have this product, but I'm under embargo.
Oh, but they're not, they shipped, apparently.
They shipped the product to pre-order customers already.
Oh, okay.
So it's out there. So I am not going to show you mine, but Wyze announced last month a $20 Wyze Sense device that is a sensor. So you can see in the video for this particular blogger who got theirs, the sensor. It is a motion and open-close sensor.
So they have two different kinds of sensors, or is it 20 bucks each?
The sensor, it's 20 bucks for a sensor that does open-close motion. I think it's open-close motion.
No. You get a wireless bridge. You have to have the Wyze Cam, which we love. Mm-hmm. And that will communicate with a motion sensor and two contact sensor pairs. So you'd have to buy the... For under $50, you have to buy the bundle.
Sorry. Yes. The bundle. I have the bundle.
That's a heck of a deal. That's a heck of a deal. As usual with Wise.
I cannot show you mine. I cannot tell you my experience with it yet. Next week I won't be here, so I don't know if you want me just to record something and send it to you or what, but that is...
I'd love to get a review. Our audience is hugely interested because we've been talking about these Wise cams.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Pan cam, they're so affordable. They've really kind of set everybody on their ear because they don't have monthly subscriptions. They really work. It's a great little company. Are they in Seattle?
They are based in Seattle. They're former Amazon people. And this basically is a $50 home security kit with two open-close sensors and then
a motion sensor. Holy cow.
And they're very petite, as you can see in the camera. I mean, the camera's petite. The sensors are much... I mean, the camera itself...
Here's the video. Here's Dave Zatz's unboxing and overview video. So you can see how small it is.
That's the camera. We've
seen that. That's the Wise Cam. Yeah.
And then presumably he'll move over and open the Wise Sense in a minute.
There we go.
It's look how small that box is. That has all three sensors and the bridge.
That's the box.
That's the box.
Holy cow. You can't tell from there. So on the right is the sensor for a Hue light. On the left is Wise's sensor. It's a lot smaller.
In that sensor, that's the size of a SmartThings motion detection sensor, the Philips Hue, just most of the on-market devices.
Wow.
This is so much smaller. It's so cute.
Good for you, Wise. Apparently,
it's thanks to you guys that I bought a Wise camera and we discovered our cat's gender dysphoria.
Dysphoria,
whatever you call it.
Your cat thinks it's a human?
Our cat is a girl. The pee's like a boy.
Oh, that's very common. That's just a dominant trait in animals.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
What Stacy said.
It shoots out past the litter box.
Well.
So we couldn't figure out what was going on.
We're going to need a bigger litter box.
Put the Wise camera down there to figure it out. It was a unique use of the Wise cam.
That is a unique use. And the open close sensors are as small as the motion sensor. They're skinnier.
Look at it. Here it is. It's on the screen. That is that's really cool. Wow.
Yeah,
Who are these guys? What's their story?
So they basically are licensing hardware. So this Wise camera is the same hardware as Xiaomi's camera.
So it's they're buying Chinese gear and reselling it.
They're licensing, they're OEMing the Chinese gear. They're putting their own software platform on it. And their business.
Yeah.
And their business model is basically like Amazon's, because that's where they're from, is to sell a bunch of things at very low profit margins, you know, keeping that super minimal to gain market share and start understanding the user and get, you know, releasing new products.
Well, it's doing well because according to Zatz, the first batch of Wise Sense is already sold out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is Dave Zatz's Zatz Not Funny blog. Zatz not funny.
That's funny.
That's not funny.
Yeah, Dave is a good guy. He's a close friend of Kevin's, I think, from a long time ago, and I've known him for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Oh, and the key thing for people who like this sort of thing is the Wise Cam. You can record everything locally to your camera.
You can put a micro SD in it, or you can watch it on your phone without a micro SD.
Yes.
But there's no subscription, which is really awesome.
There's no subscription, and I don't think things have to go to the cloud.
No,
or
they don't
store it in the cloud.
No,
so
they just go.
Now, they do work with Madam A. It also works with IFT. They're working on a Google Assistant.
Nice.
And they just announced, I have to give them a plug for this, two-factor authentication for everybody out there who reuses the same password again and again and again and again. This will help you not get hacked when you do that. Yeah.
By the way, the Wirecutter recommends the Litter Robot 3 open air auto cleaning cat litter. And I think
it would scare the cat.
No,
to
I
death.
Thought so too. And then we got it.
Really?
The cats love it. And it's amazing.
No, the problem is, the cat is an orange cat, which is normally almost always male, but ours is female.
Yeah, that is unusual. Yeah.
And she will half the time pee like a boy, and so it'll spritz, it'll cover the whole back of that thing in pee. If you don't have to wash the whole thing all the time.
Does she spritz when she's in a snit?
No.
Oh, snit spritzing is the worst kind of spritzing.
Not a schnitty. It's not a spritzing schnitty, schnitty cat.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Jeff, your number of the week.
Okay, hold on here. Hold on here. My number of the week is 1202-762. This is going to blow the minds of the kids. 1-4-7-6-2-1-4-0-1.
U.S. Naval Observatory Master Clock. At the tone, Eastern Daylight Time. 18 hours, 40 minutes, 15 seconds. Universal Time. 22 hours, 40 minutes, 20 seconds. U.S. Naval Observatory Master Clock. At the...
So
it's
Andrea
wrong. It's wrong. That's not...
Is it wrong?
No, it's right. Is it? Did he say 640?
Yeah.
1840.
He said 30. Did he say 40? Okay. Oh, all right. Good.
So it blows kids' minds that we used to be able to call a number.
Yeah, remember popcorn?
At the time.
Remember you call popcorn in any area code? Darn you could call P-O-P-C-O-R-N and you get the time lady?
The best.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The best was in Massachusetts. We would play this trick on people at parties. If you tell someone to call 617 Pickle,
yeah,
get the FBI.
And they track who's calling them.
So they have audio on this post about the crazy things we used to do when we were kids with the lady's voice who did it.
Do you want
back
it
in the day?
Listen. This is the time lady. And we're gonna dial popcorn right now. I hope this actually does it. You never know with YouTube. Yeah, 767. That's the popcorn. Okay. Here we go.
Good afternoon. At the tone, Pacific Daylight Time will be 5:07:10.
That is Jane Barbie, the time lady. And they didn't play those back on tapes. They had the weirdest system.
Yeah, a big drum.
Yeah.
So to this day, 10,000 people a day call the Naval Observatory to get the time.
Wow.
I remember, what was it? Oh, in one of the best movies of all time, Bringing Up Baby, she actually has a thing where Katharine Hepburn fakes the Naval Observatory time lady, or I guess the popcorn time lady.
I love Bringing Up Baby. Cary Grant.
At the sound of the tone, the time will be.
I don't remember that.
And then Cary Grant's upset with her, and she's pretending not to be talking to him, nice. And he's yelling at him. It's very nice. And everyone should watch that movie.
And for
it's
the
awesome.
Young people who don't know how to do anything without looking at the web, here's the website, tyco.usno.navy.mil, and you can call the U.S. Naval Observatory. You know who lives in the U.S. Naval Observatory?
The vice president.
Yeah.
I know that because I watched Veep.
You think there's a guy upstairs on the phone giving the time out? Well,
I think the time there now is about 1869. Sorry.
Or call Colorado Springs at a 719 number if that's better for you.
At the sound of the tone, this week in Google will be over.
Ding! Thank you very much, Stacey Higginbotham. She is, of course, Stacey on IoT at stacyonIoT.com. The IoT podcast she does with Kevin Toefel is available there, or, of course, all your favorite podcast applications at GigaStacey on the Twitter. We'll miss you next week, but we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good. Karsten, let me know if you want me to pre-record something for you.
If you want to do a review of the Wise Sense, that would be awesome. And
we could do it in our hot show, our hands-on tech show. That would be cool. We'll figure it. We'll be in touch. Our people will be in touch with your people.
Fabulous.
Jeff Jarvis, thank you so much for being here. Jeff is, as you all know, the Leonard Tow Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. He's buzzmachine.com is his blog. He has many, many books, including Geek Sparing Gifts, all about the news biz. Hope you have a wonderful May Day.
They've been up forever. I'm just a snitty guy.
He's just a former TV critic. That's all. Former TV guide critic. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. You can watch us live, twit.tv/live, or listen live. We've got streams there. If you do that, join the other folks who are doing the same thing at the chat room, irc.twit.tv. You could download episodes of any of our shows from our website, twit.tv. In the case of this show, it's twit.tv/twig. Or, of course, subscribe in your favorite podcast application, whether it be Stitcher, Overcast, Slacker, Pocket Casts, or, yes, even Luminary. We don't care.
Controversy.
Did we talk about that last week? I don't think we did, but
no.
It's, you know, it's over now. We talked about it on Twitter on Sunday. Thanks. We all are everywhere you want us to be. That's all. As long as you can get us, we're happy. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.